Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Lee Pitts, training students to be salt and light in the media.
We often find one of the things that we challenge our students with is, as Christian journalists, they feel like they should only have to cover, you know, rainbows and lollipops, and they don't think it's a Christian thing to do to cover brokenness. But the Bible is full of chronicling of brokenness, but also showing how God, you know, worked through that brokenness to achieve, you know, redemption and renewal.
Lee Pitts, next. The World Journalism Institute seeks to train journalists and people aspiring to that career with the tools and biblical worldview needed to do that work to the glory of God. My guest is Lee Pitts, Executive Director of the World Journalism Institute and Professor of Journalism at Dort University in Iowa. Lee, first, tell us about your background in journalism, maybe some of the highlights.
I began as a journalist going further back than that, I was a middle school teacher, taught 4 years language arts, social studies in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And I had this gnawingness inside of me to tell stories, pursue stories. And so I pursued a degree in journalism, so kind of a career switch there. And left the middle school, not because I didn't enjoy teaching the students, but I was answering that call to tell stories, and that landed me in the media. I worked for some secular newspapers for a while, and I spent about 7 months in Iraq as an embedded reporter in 2004, 2005, and with a regimental combat team based out of Tennessee. And then from there I went to Washington, D.C., where I spent a decade covering politics. So I like to tell people I've been to two combat zones, Iraq and Washington. And I liked Iraq better than Washington, to be honest with you. Something about covering the grunt on the ground soldiers was more appealing than covering the fancy suited politicians with their entourages and talking points. So I went on over 100 missions in Iraq, in the northeastern region of the country, and that was called the Diyala province. And everywhere from, you know, night raids and snatch and grab missions to humanitarian missions to bring supplies to impoverished villages. And I tried to give the readers back home a glimpse of what it's like to be deployed, in the desert, thousands of miles away from home. And so I felt I was right there covering the first rough draft of history, as they say, and being able to be the eyes and ears of the people back home who are wondering what their loved ones were doing, while deployed overseas.
Was there any danger for you there in Iraq?
Yes, sir. Well, I mean, there were firefights, and I remember one particular. We were at a U.S. funded hospital opening, and there's literally like a red ribbon cutting. They literally had a red ribbon around the front of this U.S. funded hospital that was being built in this Iraqi village, and we were all gathered for the kind of VIP ceremony, and we're in this little cobblestone courtyard that was surrounded by a brick wall. And while we were having the dignitaries give their little speeches, both the American soldiers and the local leaders, some gunfire erupted and machine gun bullets, you know, skipped off the cobblestone courtyard, and everybody kind of scattered. And I remember this soldier turning to me and saying, you know, stick with me. And I said, that sounded like a pretty good idea. So I'll stick with you. But he actually ran toward the gunfire. He ran outside the courtyard toward the gunfire. And I was pretty amazed. That's what they're trained to do, right? To run toward the noise. And I wasn't trained to do that. So I stopped following him and kind of crouched down in a corner of the courtyard where two sides intersected and waited the firefight out there while things were going on outside the courtyard. I remember the Iraqi dignitaries who were there, they cut the red ribbon to the door of the hospital, clapped really fast, and then ran inside. And I was kind of alone in that courtyard for a while, wondering who was going to be the next person to pop through the door there from the outside. And, you know, thankfully, it was an American soldier that came and said that they were looking for me. It's time to get out of here. And I agreed with his assessment. It's time to get out of here. So I followed him and I ran. He told me, don't run a straight line. I did a zigzagging run to the back of a Humvee that was engine idling and waiting for me, and we drove off. So that was a firefight that I was involved in. There were other ones, but yeah, it was 7 months there, lots of missions, I still draw from those stories when I teach my journalism classes.
Mm. You were the media, and then you dealt with the media as a press secretary for a U.S. senator. for a little while?
Correct. Yes, sir. Yeah, I was a press secretary for a couple of years for a now retired senator from Tennessee, Republican Lamar Alexander, former University of Tennessee president, former presidential candidate and secretary of education. He wore many hats. And I tell you, I spent a few years in Washington as a political reporter for newspapers. And then then Senator Alexander offered me a position as his press secretary, and I did that for a couple of years. But I decided at the end that I like kind of being on the outside looking in rather than the inside looking out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I left to go be a magazine reporter for World. But I will say those 2 years as a press secretary kind of made me a better journalist, because it kind of gave me the insight of what goes on behind the curtain, so to speak. And I knew a lot more of the behind the scenes than I would have ever known if I had never been, you know, a staffer for a while. So I think it made me a better reporter, kind of being on the inside there for a little bit.
Well, I'd like to talk to you more about your journalism career, but I think we better move along to the World Journalism Institute, of which you're the executive director, and of course the tie is there to World Magazine. But for starters, Lee, tell us how WJI got started. Who started it, and what was the initial vision, mission behind it?
Yeah, sure. Well, WJI will actually celebrate its 25th year in here now. We've been doing this for 25 years, and basically, you know, it's the World News Group, the World Organization, got together and wanted to create an organization or a part of the organization that would, you know, offer Christians a way to explore their calling in, you know, the fast growing field of journalism, multimedia journalism. So to, you know, teach them how to be a biblically objective journalist who informs, educates, and inspires. And so we, 25 years, we've been having students, primarily start off as a college program. And they began attending events in Asheville, North Carolina, where World News Group is headquartered. And then they moved to New York City for a little bit. They've held events in New York City and Washington, D.C., and Los Angeles, California, and Austin, Texas. And now we do it in Sioux Center, Iowa. So as you can tell, our cities are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But we've been at Dort University here, the college program, for the last several years now, and that's been a great fit. It gives it much more of a kind of a retreat feel to the students, that we have the dorms here, we have the classroom space, we have the cafeteria, all walkable, and so I just see the bonds with the students and the instructors get much tighter, because we kind of live in community for the 2.5 week program here. So we've been doing that, and that's originally the college program, and now we've got a mid-career program for people that are, you know, later in life in their career, and looking at maybe enhancing their writing or storytelling skills. And we've also added numerous other ones, such as WJI Europe. We just had our second WJI Europe this past August in Brussels, Belgium, and the year before that we did it in Krakow, Poland. And this past summer we also did WJI Hispanic for the first time, so we had a WJI Hispanic course. And we do a professor's retreat for journalism professors from around the country to encourage and lift up one another and challenge one another. And yeah, we're expanding beyond our initial base of the college program. And we're doing multiple offerings now for people who want to kind of hone their storytelling muscles from a journalistic standpoint.
Now, there are obviously many journalism schools across the country, journalism schools, and some of the journalism, of course, is taught under the umbrella of mass media or mass communications or something like that. But you teach in journalism at Dort University there. Can you contrast the journalism education that a student gets in college with what's being taught at the World Journalism Institute?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, for the college program, it's a 2.5 week program here in Sioux Center, Iowa, at Dort University. And I think one of our distinctives is that we have instructors who are active professional journalists, currently in the trenches as editors and writers, reporters, and they come and take time out of their busy schedules and including taking vacation time or whatever, or continuing to work on the side while they're here for their regular jobs. And they mentor the students as the students here do journalism, like we throw them out into the world of Sioux County, Sioux Center, Iowa, and have them cover things like local festivals and local events and activities. And it's interesting, this town of about 8,000 roughly, we have about 32 reporters for 2.5 weeks kind of scouring the area for stories. And you could argue that we're one of the biggest, places in the nation for per capita journalists for those 2 weeks. So, 32 journalists run around this town, but they go and they find stories, and they do written stories, and they do podcast radio type stories and video stories, and then they get edited, you know, one-on-one editing, small group editing with these practicing professional journalists who are kind of, you know, you do this for a living. So I think the journalism is a profession best learned by doing. You know, I think if you're sitting in a classroom talking about journalism, you know, that's kind of like, you know, being in the parking lot of Disney World and not going into the park and riding the rides. Like, I think to really do journalism, you really learn journalism, you got to do it. And so that's one of our distinctives. We throw them out there. You know, we kind of have them the entire 2.5 weeks we're there. They don't have to compete with other classes or other schedules like they do at a normal college. We do, you know, 9 a.m. morning sessions and post lunch afternoon sessions and after dinner evening sessions. And they really get to focus on journalism full time. And many of them say they, after the 2.5 weeks, that they learn more in that time frame than they did an entire semester of journalism, just because it's so intensive. And I think they obviously appreciate the mentoring they get from the practicing professionals.
You know, I did an interview with the director of the World Journalism Institute a number of years ago. I think before we did this discussion, I think you told me his name was probably Bob Case. And as I recall, he described journalism kind of in an interesting way. He described it as something like a trade, that the tools of the journalist are words, some of the basic aspects of storytelling and so on. He said it's kind of a little bit like a plumber, where they have tools and they have a trade and they learn it, that he feels like it could actually be learned in a rather concentrated way once you have those basic skills mm-hmm. honed. Do you see it like that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think journalism is not brain surgery, you know, or not mechanical engineering. I think there's some basics that you have to be able to grasp, and then once you grasp those basics, the real growth occurs, and by applying those basics and doing those basics. I mean, just not to turn this into a journalism lecture, but I mean, you know, the basis would be developing a nose for news and a news judgment. What is a good story? What isn't a good story? And then how do you report and gather information once you land on a good story? How do you interview? How do you observe? How do you find documents? And then lastly, how do you take all that stuff you've gathered and structure it and craft into a good story, whether that delivery system is print, video, or audio? How do you structure a good story? So yeah, we hit those things, and then once you kind of grasp those, it's more about going out and doing it. I would say in my own journalism experience, I mean, I probably learned more in my first 3 months as a reporter in a newsroom in Chattanooga, Tennessee, than I did in my, you know, 2 years of getting a degree in journalism. So we try to emphasize that. We don't want, I mean, these college students are coming from, you know, semesters in college, in classrooms, you know, getting probably a lot of teacher directed lectures and assignments. And we try to make this whole community our classroom and get them out of the classroom and covering things that happen around here. And you might think that, you know, not a lot happens in a place like Sioux Center, Iowa, but one of the takeaway lessons, even among the practicing professional journalists who come and teach us, is how many stories there are anywhere, really. You can find stories anywhere. And we've, you know, this is our seventh or eighth year doing it at Dort University in Sioux Center, Iowa, and roughly 30 journalists a summer come, and we haven't run out of stories yet, and lots of interesting stories. And I think that's a good lesson for the students, is that you can find stories outside of like the quote unquote media centers of New York City or Washington or LA or whatever. And I think that's an important lesson, because you could argue that too many journalists today kind of live in kind of that dome of DC and New York and think that all stories kind of revolve around those areas and rarely get outside that dome. And so I think a lot of our students coming to the Midwest and finding stories, hopefully they'll stick to them as they go out and practice journalism after graduating.
Well, my guest today on His People is Lee Pitts. He is executive director of the World Journalism Institute, and he's also a professor of journalism at Dort University in Iowa. And Lee, as I understand it from your website, you teach students, whether they're on the college level, college course, whether they're mid-career, whether it's a Europe course, you're teaching them basically journalistic writing, video, and podcasting.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we kind of teach them to be a one-person band, so to speak. You know, like it used to be maybe in the old days, kind of more of a silo mentality with journalism. You were either a print journalist or a radio journalist or a TV journalist, and you never really kind of crossed mediums. But now, you know, in today's world with accessibility technology, yeah, and the affordability of equipment and so on, that everybody has to be able to play multiple journalistic instruments, so to speak. So a print writer needs to know how to do a podcast, and a radio journalist needs how to do a YouTube video, and vice versa. YouTube broadcast journalist, video wise, needs to know how to write a story for the website. So yeah, we teach them all those different skill dissemination skills, and each of them have their own different craft and techniques and software and editing. But at the same time, they also share a lot in common. I mean, you know, a good story is a good story, whether you deliver it by sound or the eyes or through the written word. So we do kind of talk about, you know, what the structure of a good story, the craft of a good story, as well as the different mediums.
So what is a good story as you see it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to give away too much of our trade secrets, but I would say that I think most people know what the answer is to a good story because they know what it's like to when they react to listening to or reading or watching a good story. You know, we all know the basic elements of what draws us into a story. You know, since Jesus was telling parables, and we might not be able to define it, but we sense it when we go to a movie or whatever. Matter of fact, I just showed my kids this past weekend the movie E.T., and even though my 6 and 8 year old, they can't write a 500 word essay about what made that a good story, they definitely reacted to that good story. And so we think that you know, a good story begins with people, really. You know, we stories are about people and how people are affected by things that happen in this world. So for example, we don't talk about immigration stories. We talk about stories about the immigrant. We don't talk about healthcare stories. We talk about stories about the patient or the doctor. We don't talk about education stories. We talk about the student, or we talk about the teacher. You know, we don't talk about political stories. We talk about the politician, the lawmaker. And that, I think that's one of the first mindsets is usually a good story is about a person in some sort of world, you know, facing some kind of obstacle in the way to achieving some sort of goal. And that's kind of the elements of a good story. And then you find a face for that story, and that face can kind of stand in and symbolize other people who are facing similar obstacles in the way to that goal. So we're always telling our students, you know, how do you turn stats into stories? You turn stats into stories by finding a face or faces that make that stat come alive.
Now, more than the skills of writing, video, podcasting, and all of that, you teach a biblical worldview, and then how, as I understand it, how it shapes the way a person reports on the news. In other words, if God is in control, how does that influence the reporting of things like politics, wars, disasters, and those kind of things? Can you talk about that, how you teach a biblical worldview, and then how that influences the work of the journalist?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, we talk about the power of stories to impact communities, and that's grounded in the Bible and the use of stories in the Bible and the use of Jesus talking in parables. We talk about also, you know, as a Christian worldview, we believe that all people are created in God's image, and all people's stories are worthy to be told. We also, you know, take the Gospel of Luke as an example of a journalist. You know, he says how he carefully investigated everything from the beginning and wrote an orderly account. Mm-hmm. And so we talk about, you know, that's a good model. You know, that wasn't that gospel was a news report, and, you know, not a lecture. And so we use that as a model. And that includes, you know, covering brokenness. You know, the Bible doesn't shy away from covering the brokenness of the world, both in the Old and New Testament. And we often find one of the things that we challenge our students with as Christian journalists, they feel like they should only have to cover, you know, rainbows and lollipops, and they don't think it's a Christian thing to do to cover brokenness. But the Bible is full of chronicling of brokenness, but also showing how God, you know, worked through that brokenness to achieve, you know, redemption and renewal. And so we talk about that the ultimate story kind of follow that template of the story, that creation, fall, redemption template. And just like in Luke's gospel, you know, he called out, you know, the betrayals of Jesus from Peter or Judas, and he didn't airbrush the early believers and chronicle their mistakes. We as Christians, you know, should do the same, you know, and not airbrush things, but cover the darkness You know, also look for stories of redemption, but even covering the darkness before the redemption occurs, largely because we hope that that our stories shining a light on that darkness could bring people through that situation to maybe help. You know, God could use those tools to help bring about that redemption. So we feel like, you know, covering brokenness is, you know, a way to turn heads, to help people to notice what's going on in their community around them, to make the community better. We feel like as Christian journalists, we are community builders, not community destroyers. And that includes, you know, covering, you know, the fall of things and hope that people in that community will come together and be used to create, you know, to lead to the redemption of that fall.
As you train, whether they're college students or mid-career people, in covering the news like that from a biblical worldview perspective, does that same perspective apply equally well, whether it's a Christian media like World Magazine or whether it's something, if you will, secular?
Well, I mean, I think that, I mean, we have WGI grads who work for World News Group, of course. We also have WGI grads who work for the Washington Post and the New York Times, the Des Moines Register, with the Wall Street Journal. We have, so yeah, we have people that are in secular and Christian publications. I would say, you know, for the students or WGI graduates who work in the secular world, you know, when I've talked to them, this might even be something they could go into more depth when, because they're more in the frontline trenches than I am. But when I talk to them, they talk about how one of their biggest strengths they can bring as a Christian to their secular newsrooms is just some of the stories they pick and some of the things that they focus on to cover, and just having a, you know, looking at things with a you know, a Christian heart, Christian eyes. They come up with story ideas that maybe others would ignore or not highlight, and they feel like that's their biggest power and strength in these in these secular newsrooms. And that's a good one. I mean, the stories that you pick are important, because if you don't pick them, they don't get told. So I think that's valuable. You know, I haven't come across any WGI grads in secular publications who've been muzzled or told that they you know, can't cover this or that or whatever because of their faith. Or I feel like, you know, that they are allowed to, you know, follow their heart and follow their curiosity as they cover things in their region. So I feel like it's, you know, and a story is a story, whether you work for the Washington Post or World Magazine, a good story is a good story.
Well, whether it's the college course, which aims, of course, at college students, or the mid-career course, which aims at people that have been out in the work world for a while, what can you tell us? I realize it's kind of a broad question to hit both of them, but curriculum, instructors?
We start off with, we kind of throw them in the deep end of the pool at the beginning of their 2 weeks here, talking about the college program. We take them out to cover something that very first day. It's like, it's kind of like throwing them into the pool, and then we kind of stand by the edge of the pool and watch them try to learn how to swim, and then we don't let them drown or anything, obviously, as they go out and cover something that very first day. But we're right there watching them kind of you know, flail their arms and legs in the deep waters of reporting, and then we pull them out of that and we kind of dry them off, and we feel like their attention the rest of the 2.5 weeks is stronger because they know what it's like to be in the pool and not know how to swim. So then we teach them how to swim, and then we keep throwing them back in the pool, and they get better with their strokes and so on. That's kind of a big macro example of our philosophy. But we cover things like there's a tulip festival here in Orange City that has thousands of people, and they go and cover that. They do a 4-minute radio pocket size profile, we call it a 4-minute profile of somebody in the community. They do we fly in lawyers from Washington that argue cases before the Supreme Court, and we do a mock press conference here pretending like the steps of Daughter are the steps of the Supreme Court, and they do a video story interviewing lawyers coming out of a court ruling to get that experience. We put them in pods and have them work on magazine stories for World Magazine or radio stories for the World and Everything In It World podcast, or video stories for World Watch, World's video program. So if week one is kind of instruction heavy with covering real things, and then week two we run it like a newsroom, and they go out and cover stuff, and their teachers become their editors, and they come back in the newsroom and go over the story and process it and file it and edit it and so on. So So week one is instruction heavy. Week two is lab heavy. I guess you could say journalism lab heavy. And as far as instructors go, it's kind of a rotating cast of characters depending on who's available each summer. We have, you know, several veterans from like the World and Everything In It, World News Group, who help out. We also have we've had people with experience at national cable news shows. We've an editor from the Indianapolis Star comes quite frequently. It's kind of a good mix. We do have a core of world journalists like Nick Eicher, who posts the World and Everything In It, is a veteran WGI instructor, and I think the instructors enjoy just as much as the students. I think it's inspiring to them to see young folks, you know, following the same passion they had and the same and wanting to pursue the same vocation they have, and it's neat to see those bonds form, and mm-hmm. not just in the classroom and not just in the newsroom, but like, you know, in the cafeteria, or when we go you know, get ice cream somewhere, or we go to watch a movie or something, do something together. It's just neat to see that the bond between the journalists and the students here. And I would say, you know, building on that is that one of the most encouraging things is to see the students themselves bond with each other. You know, you have these, you know, 28 to 32 students from all over the country. Last year, we had 17 states represented, and they're strangers to one another, except they share two things in common, two bonds in common, a love for the Lord and also a love of stories and love of storytelling. And so to watch those commonalities often lead to strong bonds, and to see them go from strangers to friends over those 2.5 weeks and grow with one another as they learn. You know, we push them hard and work them hard and we wear them out. And in some ways that mutual, you know, exertion and exhaustion of running a journalistic marathon together bonds them together. And they form these bonds and friendships that last for a long time. I'm still on text threads of the WGI 2020 class or WGI, you know, classes from previous years who still stay in touch with one another. And I think the value of that is that they get to journey alongside one another in their vocational calling. And that benefit might extend for years beyond WJI as they keep in touch with one another, as they go through their careers, and they can be with each other to lift each other up or challenge each other and encourage one another and pray for one another as they enter this vocational field of journalism.
Well, Lee, if people would like more information about the World Journalism Institute, where would you direct them?
Yeah, I mean, WJI.world is our main website. That's WJI.world, WORLD. You can also go to the main World website where you can get the World Magazine and the World and Everything In It podcast. And that is also a source. There's links on the main World website, which is WNG.org, WNG.org, which is worldnewsgroup.org. And they can check out more about WGI. We've got, again, many offerings and programs beyond just the college one. We started a high school one last year. I should mention that one as well. For here at Dort University, we had about 16 or so college students come last year for our first ever high school journalism program, and that's, we kind of get your entire lifestyle there. We haven't done a WGI infant yet, but maybe we'll do that one day. We get you can interact with WGI from high school to college. To, we have a young professionals. If you're from Europe, if you're you know, from a Hispanic country, if you are a mid-career, somebody in your 40s, 50s, 60s and beyond who's thinking about doing storytelling and dabbling in the media, we have that program as well too. So we have a lot of offerings that people can check out.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Lee Pitts, Executive Director of the World Journalism Institute and Professor of Journalism at Dort University. For more information, go to wji.world. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Teresa Sidebotham on how to handle allegations in the context of churches and ministries.
And honestly, when the ministries get in trouble, it's not usually because a thing happened. It's because they responded badly when they first heard about it. And they looked like they didn't care, or they were covering up, or they wouldn't deal with it. That's what tends to take ministry reputations down.
That's tomorrow at the same time, right here on His People. Thanks for listening.